They just gone keep showing the movie Volcano, huh? LOL. Max your hell.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_Beeble. We've got another of the season recap podcast here for you today. We're going to be looking at the Washington Wizards. So Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
All right, let's get to it indeed. We'll look at this Wizards team. A team who I think was disappointing this season with a 43-39 record, ended up with the eighth seed in the Eastern Conference, exactly on their expected win-loss record for the year. Not the best year for the Wizards. They're a team who does actually have a pick coming up in this draft, which is something that hasn't necessarily been happening all that often for them. Pick 15 and pick 44 in the upcoming draft. Not to say that they won't trade them, because they've always been fairly ready to trade those picks, but 15 and 44 as their draft choices. In terms of free agents upcoming for this offseason, there's not a lot of movement here. Jason Smith has already opted into his $5.5 million player option. They've got Jody Meeks, who has a $3.5 million player option, who he will almost 100% assuredly opt into, given he is still fighting, I think, 16 games of a PED suspension. Well, he had a 20-game suspension. I think he's got about 16 games left on that. So he will opt into that. And then the unrestricted guys, there's Timmy Frazier, there's Chris McCullough, there's Ramon Sessions and Ty Lawson, who were signed very late. And then there's Mike Scott, who was on a minimum contract, and he's the only really important one there. He was a key factor and a key rotation piece, and I think they'd like to bring him back next season. There's also Devin Robinson, who is on a two-way deal, who was last season, but we barely got to see him at all. So I think would they be looking to bring back a guy like Scott? Maybe they look at Ty Lawson, who they inexplicably played in the playoffs, even though he played okay. The thought process, though, didn't make sense, or the decision to get there, especially considering how well Tomas Satoransky had played, was one that didn't sit all that well with me. But basically, the core of this team is returning with everyone else there. And the only really important guy, I think, in terms of free agency is Mike Scott. This is a team that finished the season 18th in pace with the 14th best offense and 15th best defensive rating, basically bang on right in the middle of every one of those categories, which makes sense given they have the 15th draft pick and they were the 8th seed in the Eastern Conference. They had the 4th best 3-point percentage in the NBA at 38%, and they were 6th best at defending the 3 at 35% for opposition shooting. So that's, I guess, a bit of a cause for concern, because 3-point percentage is often defense independent, meaning it's not necessarily what you're doing in terms of 3-point percentage that causes the opposition to miss. So there's a chance that that could go back and normalize next year. Their 3-point percentage could come down, and that might be 2 to 3 losses right there as well, which could lead to some problems overall with this team. So that is something to pay some attention to. Otherwise, most of their numbers are basically just always right in the middle. They were quite good at limiting free throws from the opposition, so that's something that was a positive for them. But otherwise, nothing really stands out when we look at the Wizards and their overall team performance for last year. In terms of leaders in the team in offensive rating, Tomas Satoransky had the best offensive rating on this team. And defensive rating, it was outside of the guys who played limited minutes, or Devin Robinson had the best, but he played 13 minutes only. Timmy Frazier, Jan Mihinmi, Marcin Gortat, and Otto Porter all had the equal best defensive rating. The worst defensive rating on this team went to Jody Meeks and Ramon Sessions. Not really a surprise there, while the worst offensive rating went to Jason Smith. No wonder he picked up his player option. Johnny Wall led the team in PER. I don't think many people would be too surprised there. While Otto Porter had the highest win shares and win shares per 48. Beal led the team in offensive box score plus minus, Gortat in defensive box score plus minus, while Otto Porter led the team in box score plus minus and in VORP. And again, not really too many surprises. He also led the team in on-off with a plus 11.2 for Porter. So he is really, you know, an important player on this team, and we'll get to him in a second for his overall overall fantasy value and what we can expect from Otto moving forward. Let's start, though, with the best player on this team, the best fantasy contributor, and that is Johnny Wall. Limited to just 47 games this year with knee problems. He is going to be turning 28 in the early portions of the 18-19 season. He still played 35 minutes per game, averaged over 20 points per game, 1.5 threes, 4 rebounds, 9.8 assists, 1.5 steals, and an incredible 1.1 blocks. He was a triple one player this year. 42%, 75%, and 35%. He was the 12th. Well, his previous four seasons in fantasy rank had been 13th, 11th, 11th, and 12th. So he did dip down this season. So let's look at why that was the case. Well, if we compare him to last season, his free throw percentage dropped by 6%. That's a big reason. His field goal percentage dropped by 3%. That is another pretty significant reason. His steal rate, which had been at 1.8, 1.7, 1.9, and 2, went to 1.5. So a dip there. Now, he did offset it by increasing his threes and almost doubling his block rate, but that drop in free throw percentage was significant, and the drop in the field goal percentage also made a big difference, and part of the reason he fell from the 12th ranked guy to the 22nd ranked guy. If he is healthy, and we don't know that because his knees have been a consistent problem, even though he had barely missed any time, and again, you could look at John Wall and say, well, John Wall, healthy player. You know, not someone that ever gets injured. Missed a total of, I'm going to add these up on the fly, he missed 12 games over the previous four seasons combined. And then this year, he missed almost 40 games. He missed 35. So, you know, it goes to show you that past instances of health don't necessarily mean that a player is going to be healthy moving forward. I can rely on John Wall. I'll get 79 games average playing time. Yeah, you might, but you didn't. And that's the sort of shit that happens. And, you know, you pick him with in your second round, a totally fine pick. And didn't work out because of the knee injury. He did up his three-point percentage back to 35%, but he's been up and down with that. Over the past five seasons, his three-point percentage, 35, 30, 35, 33, 35. It's all over the place. It never seems to exceed 35%, but there's always going to be inconsistency and change there. At least he's hitting over one a game. The blocks are nice. He's always been one of the best shot-blocking guards in the NBA, probably the best outside of Josh Richardson, but getting over a block a game is an absolutely astonishing number for John Wall and for a point guard in general. The defense from Wall did dip a little bit this season. It still was really good as a point guard, but not quite at the level as what it had been in the past, but still, he's obviously a really impactful player, and getting 10 assists along with 1.5 steals and over a block a game is a rare combination. Bradles Beal got himself nominated into the All-Star game for the first time. He is closing in on the age of 25. He was absolutely fantastic this season, put together some really, really strong performances. And yeah, at times, I guess you could make the argument that he was perhaps the best player on this team. 82 games. He played all 82 games, 36 minutes, which is something we'd been worried about with Beal in the past, given his stress reactions in his leg, but it looks like they've managed it and he's through that problem now. 22.6 points, 2.4 threes, 4.5 rebounds, 4.5 assists, 1.2 steals, 46, 79, and 37. So really good efficiency numbers, excellent scoring, good threes, fantastic assist numbers for a shooting guard, nice steals, and he was the 33rd ranked player this season. But what can he do realistically from here to get better? Where can he get better? 46% shooting, can he shoot better than that? Maybe. Probably. He shot 48% the year before, but we also saw the usage jump up by one percentage point this season. So did the increase in usage cause a 2 percentage point drop in his field goal percentage? Possibly. He shot 2 percentage points worse from three, so that could be a factor in that as well. But he had career high rebounds, career high assists, equal career high in steals. So all those things were an improvement, but still overall his numbers from, or his overall rank from the season before, it did dip. Only marginally, but it did dip. But I think that he is a lock to be a top 35 guy as we move forward. A 20-point per game guy, probably 22 points per game, 2.5 to 3 triples, 4 rebounds, 4 to 5 assists, over a steal, pretty good efficiency. If he could get that free throw percentage, and that's one of the reasons he dipped as well, from 83 down to 79, get that back to 83% on the volume that he takes, then you're talking about another jump of 4 to 5 spots in the rankings at least. So I think that Beal should be looked at as a top 30 player. Maybe the potential you could look at him as a top 20 guy, but again, where is that level improvement coming from? Is it an extra 4% from the line? Is it an extra 0.5 or 3? Which are all realistic. He can do all those. An extra point and a half per game. All that stuff can happen. And maybe that does elevate him here. But I think he's more of an end of the second, start of the third sort of guy who is just starting to enter his prime. And at this point, we should feel pretty good about the leg injury. Doesn't mean that it won't come back or another injury won't appear, but we should feel pretty good about where he's currently sitting. Otto Porter was the 40th ranked player this year. He's 25 years of age. Beal is younger than Porter, amazingly. 77 games, 32 minutes, 14.5 points, almost 2 threes, 6.5 boards, 2 assists, 1.5 steals, 0.5 block, and of course, exemplary efficiency. 50% from the field, 83 from the line, 44 from three for a true shooting of 60%, which as a wing is astonishing. Now, he is a guy that is obviously a very low turnover player. We know that about him. We see it all the time. And talked about how good he is in terms of low turnovers, and that does skew his numbers in terms of his overall value in 9 category leagues. It wasn't his strongest category this season, which it had been in the past. His steal rate actually overtook that for the steals to be his best category this year, because his turnovers did jump. The season before, they were at 0.5, which is amazingly low. This year, they were up to 1 per game, as he did handle the ball a little bit more, saw that assist numbers rise, and we saw his usage jump from 15 to 18, which is exactly where it should be, considering how good of a player he is and how efficient he is. So I'm glad that Scott Brooks was able to adjust that and put together a game plan that made more sense by utilizing your high efficiency players. I think that there is a chance that Porter can become a top 30 guy. He'd need to take that usage up to 22-23%. There's no reason in my mind that Markieff Morris should be taking or 20% usage as opposed to Porter's 19. It should be 22 Porter, 17 Morris. But unless you're going to get through Morris's thick head that he shouldn't be taking the shots that he is and giving them to a player who is more efficient, then that's a hard thing. But Porter does, or he can struggle at times in terms of when he's forced into a larger role, like when Wall was out, his efficiency in his production wasn't quite as good as what we would have hoped for. And that is something that we do need to bear in mind when we consider what Otto can do. Not Otto, what Otto can do as he moves forward. But another top 48 category finish is definitely in play. Hasn't gotten there yet. 41st last year, 43rd this year, but an increase in his overall usage could possibly get there. We also have to make sure he can just stay healthy with his hip. Now, he plays games, but he just always seems to have, oh shit, we're always just one moment away from that hip. From that hip becoming a problem. So that is something that we do need to just keep in the back of our mind. Now, Markieff Morris did not start the season out. He had a hernia issue, ended up playing 73 games and 27 minutes, 11.5 and 5.5, 2 assists, 0.8 steals and 0.5 block to be the 114th ranked player. 48, 82, 37, really good efficiency numbers from Markieff, but those minutes are obviously not ideal. He's 28 years of age at this point. I don't think he's got very high upside at all. I think they will want to see more of Oubre and Porter together at the 3 and the 4, which will limit Markieff unless they push him more to center. I don't think he's playing 31 or 32 minutes a night, but he should be able to see more than the 27 minutes per night he saw this season. He is frustrating at times. He has strong games at times. But overall, there's not a lot that I love about Markieff Morris as a bloke or as a player. But he can put together some okay performances. He can be useful at the five, and I'd probably prefer him to play at the five. 20% of his minutes came there, according to Basketball Reference. I'd like to see him play a little bit more there with Oubre and with Porter, and that might be able to up his rebound rate, his efficiency, and his block rate somewhat. I don't expect any of them to jump sky high and become, you know, extraordinarily valuable, but it is something to pay attention to. And he's a guy that, if you're in a 14-team league, he's a really strong pick. In a 12-team league, the spot where you'd have to draft him in probably one of your last two picks, I'd rather take a flyer on upside guys like the Rooster, Danilo Gallinari, who, if he's falling down there, I'd take him because the top 50 upside's real. Whereas for a guy like Morris, it isn't. And yeah, he'll be steady in that area, but there'll be times when he's not worth owning and he's dropping, and then he comes back and his upside is very limited. So that's the way I think that we should be looking at Markieff Morris. Let's talk Kelly Oubre Jr. now, who is heading into his fourth season in the NBA. He's 22 years of age. He played 81 games, 28 minutes, 12 points, 1.6 triples, 4.5 rebounds, an assist, a steal, and 40, 82, and 34. So inefficient in terms of his shooting. He was the 155th ranked player over the course of this season, but was able to take steps forward. An extra 7 minutes of playing time, an extra 5 points per game, doubled his three-pointers, more rebounds, doubled the assists, more steals, doubled the blocks. Did go backwards in his field goal percentage shooting, but at least he was able to hit threes at a decent rate. But he was 34% shooting from three for the season, but the last 30 games, 28%. And that 28% is in line with the 28% he shot the year before. It's sort of in line with the 32% he shot the year before that. So which one is real for Kelly Oubre? Is it the guy that was able to up his shooting percentages at the start of the season, or the regression that we saw back to career norms at the end of the year? And that is the concern that I do have with Oubre. You know, can he be a guy that takes the correct shot? Now, he wasn't a guy that saw a lot of his three-pointers on catch-and-shoot opportunities in the 52nd percentile in terms of three-pointers assisted in the wing position. Now, it was still 92% of them that were assisted in the catch-and-shoot sort of position, but that's, you know, low. A lot of guys are at 96-97% for that area. So it probably means he's taking a few off the dribble threes that he maybe isn't quite as good as what he anticipates. Now, I do think that there is a chance, not high, but it is a chance that he is a player that that can or could move into a larger role next season. Not sure that that'll be the case, but if it is, it means that it would be supplanting Markieff Morris and playing alongside Porter, with Porter at the four. And if he gets himself into a 30-minute or so role, then he does have value. But is the upside high enough? Is the lack of assists, the relatively low rebounds, the low usage, not high efficiency guy worth picking? Does he have top 70 upside? Well, if he's going to, this would be the season that we see it from him, as his fourth season in the NBA. Does he get there? I'm not convinced of it, but I think he'd be a worthy flyer, and I'd rather take a flyer on him with my last pick than, say, Markieff Morris. Marcin Gortat had an ADP of 68 last season, which was nonsense at the time. I talked about it ad nauseum, how I wouldn't want nothing to do with him at that spot. He ended up the season as the 182nd ranked player. He's 34 years of age. He played all 82 games, 25 minutes, 8 points, 7.5 rebounds, half a steal, 0.7 blocks, 52 and 68 percentage, and it's not going to get better for Marcin Gortat. The playing time dwindled. He went from 31 minutes down to 25 minutes. Yan Mahinmi was there. We saw Mike Scott. We saw Markieff Morris play minutes at center. And I just don't see that as he gets another year older, that the playing time's going to go back up. Now, he did do some things defensively, which were impressive for this team and really, really useful for this team. And the team was 2.5 points per 100 possessions better with him on the court, as opposed to him on the bench. So that's something to pay attention to. But offensively, he did struggle. Now, I think we can put a part of that on the fact that John Wall wasn't there, because him and Wall, despite their off-court clashes and chemistry issues, on the court, their pick-and-roll stuff and Gortat setting screens is quite an important factor for this team. But yeah, you know, now that he is getting older, he's not going to have the same level of athleticism. Not that he was overly high in that area. He's just not a high percentage, not a high rate shot blocking guy. He was 0.7 this year, which as a center is not good enough. The rebounding rate dipped. The scoring dipped. The efficiency went down from 57% to 52%. I think we can pretty much write Marcin Gortat off as being anywhere close to a top 150 player from now on. The next guy is a guy that I'm pretty excited to talk about. You know that it is my man Tomasz Satoranski, who finished third on this team in VORP. Was really impressive in the time that he had to replace John Wall, played at the two, played at the three as well, and I thought was really strong. A plus 3.1 in his on-off numbers, a box score plus minus of 1.1, which is fourth highest on the team behind Porter, Beal and Wall. And the nonsense of not playing him in the playoffs so you could play Ty Lawson, I thought was stupidity from Scott Brooks. He's 26 years of age, Tomasz. He played 23 minutes, 7-3-4, with half a three, half a steal on 52% shooting, 78 from the line, and 47% from three. Now, obviously, there is room for regression there, considering he shot 24% from three the year before. But that often happens with Europeans coming over, is they struggle with the adjustment early on, and then they get it rolling, because he was a 40% shooter over in Europe as well. So, you know, which one's more realistic? I think 45 is closer to what he really is as a shooter as opposed to 24, but I don't think he is a 45% shooter, nor do I think he's a 51% shooter from the field. But he can defend, he gets assists, he can rebound, and he can score. And we saw all that from Satoranski, even though when he was playing, he was deferring to the other players on the team, hence his usage was so low, but that's why he was such an impactful guy in terms of his on-court play for the Wizards. Now, it doesn't necessarily make it great for us in fantasy if he's constantly deferring his numbers away and not taking shots, and especially when he hits them at such a rate. But part of the reason he hits them at such a rate is because he was so good at knowing when to take the right shot. In the 30 games he started, he averaged 10.5 points, 4.5 rebounds, and almost 6 assists. He averaged over a steal per game in that time as well, and had a true shooting of 64%, which is obviously a ludicrous number, shooting 53 from the field and 51% from three as a starter. Really just nonsense sort of numbers he was putting up, but he was really good in that spot, and he should enter next season, unless more Brooks dickery occurs, as the backup point guard, who can play the backup two, who can play the backup three as well, and should, fingers crossed, be getting a 18 to 20 minute per night role, which makes him a guy that probably is a top 200-ish sort of guy, but not going to really be on the radar for standard leagues. Now, he's going to need an opportunity to be a starter, to really ever become a fantasy-relevant guy. He's still got... Well, this is actually his last season before he becomes a restricted free agent in 19-20, and that could make him interesting. But I'm not sure if we look at him from dynasty perspective, he's ever going to be a top 70 guy, but I think he can have a couple of top 150 seasons in the next 3 to 4 years. But of course, there's a few things that need to happen for that to be the case. Mike Scott, the player who is an unrestricted free agent, he will turn 30 in the early portions of the season. 19 minutes a game, 76 games, 9 points, 1-3, 3 rebounds, 53 and 66 as his percentages, and 41% from 3. But he is the antithesis of a rim protector. He averaged 0.3 blocks per 36 minutes for a total of 0.1 blocks per game. Was not a strong rebounder, only 6 boards per 36. Doesn't pass, doesn't do anything. He scores. And he does it really efficiently. 61% true shooting over the course of the regular season and the playoffs. He hits threes, and that's what he does. And that can be useful at times, but his upside is pretty limited. The rest of this team, there's not a ton happening here. Jan Mahinmi is 31 years of age. He played 15 minutes and had 5-4 and can be a steals and blocks type of center combination guy if he finds himself in a big enough role, but his knees are a problem. He's old. Could he overtake Gortat? Yeah, sure, he could. Will he be a guy that plays 30 minutes? I think there's absolutely zero chance of that. I could see more realistically a 22-22 minute split between Gortat and Mahinmi, with Morris getting those other minutes, or Scott getting those minutes. Maybe even Mahinmi only gets 20 there. And that maybe makes him a top 250 player, but the upside for him is fairly limited. Timmy Frazier was fairly piss poor this season. I know Matt Smith's a big fan of him. I am not. He was not good this year. 3 assists per game in his 14 minutes, but he just is not a good shooter. He's not a good defensive player and was rightfully overtaken by Satoransky to be that backup and might not return with this team. Jason Smith was putrid. Chris McCullough was terrible. I thought McCullough had some potential coming out of the draft off the ACL tear at Syracuse, but he has not been good, and really none of these guys are really worth mentioning. Jody Meeks is going to be suspended, Sessions, Smith, McCullough. There's very little to say about any of these guys. So the Wizards are a fairly straightforward team when we look at their fantasy recap or their fantasy value from last season and heading into next season. That will wrap it up for today. This show, a pretty limited one just because of the nature of this team. Make sure you're checking out the rest of the podcasts. And the best way to do that is by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, or Spotify. And of course, on YouTube, leave a thumbs up and a comment there. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Mike Scott.